What's going on? What's going on? This is Alex Pardo. You're listening to the Flip Empire Show, episode 258.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Guys, I'm back with another masterclass. What is going on? I got somebody who I recently met who is absolutely killing it in multiple markets, a guy by the name of Brandon Barnes, former seasoned restaurant veteran, you know, turned into a real estate professional about 2.5 years ago. And if I told you how many deals this guy has done in such a short amount of time, your mind is going to be blown. I'm not even going to reveal the volume that he did last year and what he's on pace to do this year, because we talk about it on this podcast. And more importantly, we talk about, you know, how he did it. Like, how did he bridge the gap from eventually doing no deals to a couple deals a month to the point where he's doing significantly more volume than that on a monthly basis? And we talk about why the volume isn't really what's important, but it's more what you keep. How do you do higher quality deals? You know, we talked about the fact that he doesn't even necessarily have a big team and he's still able to do the monthly volume that he's currently experiencing. And, you know, we talk specifically about which marketing channels are producing most of those deals. You know, we talk about the 80-20 with his marketing. We talk about the 80-20 with his mailing list. We talk about, you know, some of the things that he's doing that's producing the best quality deals for him. And one of those things is actually going to surprise you, because it definitely surprised me. And one of those things that, you know, he's kind of put a bug in my ear to really look at that part of our business. So, you know, we talk about just a lot of really good things that I know can have a big impact and move the needle for you in your business. So having said that, let's dive into episode 258 with Brandon Barnes. Brandon, what's going on, my friend? How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, Alex. How about yourself?
Doing great, man. I am blessed in every way. And I know we were just talking offline here, man. You have you got a little miracle coming in here in the next less than a week. You have your second child coming, man. I'm extremely excited for you.
Yeah, November 1st can't come fast enough. I appreciate it. We're really excited. Family's blessed to add another member to our growing team.
Very cool, man. Well, by the time that people are listening to this podcast, your baby's probably a couple weeks old, maybe a month old at that point. So your world is about to change. You know, like, it's funny, when my wife and I had our first, it was a big change. Like, we had our hands full, but we didn't realize how easy we had it until we had our second. Because once you have that second, then you really have your hands full.
Yeah, that's what we're hearing. So it's, you know, we're as prepared as you're going to be, but I don't think you can ever prepare for adding somebody into the world. So it's going to be fun. It'll be an adventure, and yeah, we're looking forward to it.
No, I'm excited for you guys, man. That's fantastic. So yeah, brother, why don't we do this, man? For people that you and I, and, you know, just to be totally transparent to the audience, you and I haven't had a whole lot of interaction, but I have, you know, heard your names from your name from mutual friends in the industry. Obviously, we're a part of the same mastermind, yeah. And so I've always heard great things about you. And I know that you've grown the business, you know, pretty quickly here in the last year to 2 years, from what I've heard. Why don't you kind of give people a little bit of background, you know, just briefly how you got started in the business and then what your current business looks like today?
Yeah. So we've only been doing this for about 2.5 years. So we haven't been in business for a long time. My background was food and bev for about 17 years.
Okay.
And we started back July of 2016 with a hedge fund, kind of institutional level. Mm-hmm. And we were managing their off-market acquisitions. So basically kind of got thrown into the wolves for being a wholesaler for a hedge fund. It was a unique kind of position to get started, where we had a built-in buyer. We had a lot of things built in. We just had to go find properties.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So that kind of blows my mind, just so people hear it from you, not from me. Just, and sometimes I'm kind of gun shy to talk about volume. And if you don't want to reveal that, by all means, just let me know. Cause I, you know, sometimes I think volume is, you know, it can be overstated, and I'm more about like the quality, right? What you can keep and take home. But man, the fact that you have only been in business 2.5 years and you have done the volume that you've done, if you can kind of let people know what last year looked like for you and then what you're on pace for this year, if anything, not because that necessarily helps people, but so that they know, hey, Brandon is someone I need to listen to and, you know, take notes and implement what he shares.
Yeah. So, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Volume is not the same thing as what you take home and the quality of the deal. So we did over 200 deals last year. Okay. I'm not sure on the exact number. But this year we're on pace to do probably 130, 140. Our goal is 150. And the reason for doing less this year is not because we couldn't handle it, but we're focusing on the more quality deal, what we're bringing home.
I love it.
And so it was, you know, to do 27, 30 deals in a month felt, I was like, we're doing all this work. And then you look at the P&L and there's no money there.
Yeah.
It wasn't worth it.
I'm so glad to hear you say that because I think a mistake that I see investors make, especially, you know, on Facebook and with social media, everybody posts their checks and it's like, oh, we just did 10 deals this month or we did this. But I think the focus and the emphasis is on the wrong spot. You know, you talked about, you and I know plenty of people that they do a ton of volume, but, you know, they make very little money and they're doing all this work for what? So I kind of want to talk about both aspects of that, but obviously you got to have your stuff dialed in, your systems, your team. There's no way you could do 140 to 200 deals a year if you didn't, number one, know what you were doing. Number two, you had the right people in the right seats. And number three, you had systems in place. So why don't we start with what your team looks like, and then we'll kind of transition into a lot of people that listen to the show. They do 1, 2, 3, maybe 5 deals a month, right? Yep. And they're looking for more. I kind of want to get into eventually, once we, you know, you talk about your team, how you're able to bridge that gap and grow the business with an emphasis on keeping more, not necessarily doing more.
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest thing we thought that it had to be this, we had to have all these people and had to have, you know, all these moving pieces to do all the deals. And we've actually been able to scale our team back some and do just as many deals because we focused on the profit. So our team now looks like, so we have a team in the Philippines that answers all of our calls live.
Okay.
Or calls back immediately. So we don't use any kind of answering service. And then if we don't answer it, it goes to a voicemail and they call back as quickly as possible. But then we're texting at the same time. So we just hired on 2 new acquisition managers. So we have a total of 3 acquisition managers. And then we just brought on our 2nd closing coordinator because we're promoting our first one up to a little more of the financial piece. And okay. That's pretty much all we have. So we don't really do, I manage the dispositions piece currently. So we have our team in the Philippines is 4 people strong, phones. We have 1 closing coordinator, a financial girl that kind of manages all the cash coming in, lenders and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
And then we have 3 guys that beat the phones, go to houses and get contracts for us.
Okay. Got it. With your current setup, because oftentimes people think, you know, 150, 200 deals a year, you must have a team of 10, 15, 20 people. And that's not necessarily the case. I mean, one of the things I've learned in the last year and a half or so is that, you know, you got to look at your business and figure out where you can streamline things and kind of cut the fat. So my focus this year has been like less is more. How do we simplify the business? And I love to hear you say that you don't have a big team and yet you're still able to do a lot of volume. With 4 people in the Philippines handling the phones, do you find that you're taking most of your calls live? Or like, I'm kind of curious how many of those kind of slip through the cracks and get to voicemail with 4 people on the phones.
Yeah, so we definitely miss some on the phones, and that's kind of a thing that we're focusing on right now. If we look at growing anything, it is that team. Mm-hmm. But we, you know, with the way that life is now, people respond through text more than they do through phone.
Yeah.
So even if we do miss the call, they're immediately getting a text message from us, and they're immediately going into a text campaign. Yep. And so a lot of times we're bringing those people back to life anyways.
Okay.
And so I'm sure we're missing and we're going through a lot of lead auditing right now. You know, seeing how many people we're not actually ever getting on the phone.
Yep.
So that we can kind of figure out how to bridge that gap. So we're definitely not live answering as many as I'd like. But I haven't seen a huge issue with them going to voicemail versus using like a Pat Live or something. Yeah. Versus the difficulty we had with answering services.
Yeah. And let me tell you, man, you hit, so there's two things that you just mentioned that you don't even know this, because one of them I just created a podcast on and hasn't even been released, is how we are, what the time people are listening to this has probably already been released, is we are placing such a focus and emphasis, Brandon, on doing weekly lead audit reviews. And it's crazy to me, like the missed opportunities that, whether it's the way a lead was processed or it was, you know, incorrectly, the status was incorrectly categorized, or just, you know, not digging deep enough or not handling a certain objection some way. I mean, there's so much missed opportunity in what you already have in your system as leads. And I think so many people focus on, you know, I need to generate more and more and more, but How can you be better and not necessarily bigger, right? So scale to be better before you scale to be bigger is kind of like what I'm really, really preaching to my team. And based on what you've shared with me so far, you know, it sounds like you're pretty much in line with that.
Yeah, I'm actually going to write that down right now, scale to be better. That's, I mean, we're up to 25, 30,000 mailers per city now. And we generate plenty of leads. Our response rate is anywhere from 3 to 5% on our mailers. So the amount of leads, the amount of leads, yeah, we're not in competitive markets like Miami.
So when I hear 3 to 5% response rate, that blows my mind. If I told you our response rate right now, you'd probably laugh me off the podcast. Like
it's probably like 0.5%.
You nailed it. 0.5%. Yeah. And we're like struggling to get above 0.5%, just to be totally upfront with everyone. Like it's a challenge, man.
Yeah. So we're in tertiary, kind of secondary cities. It's competitive, but not hyper competitive like the big cities.
Yeah.
Especially where you're at. But, you know, I'm sitting here thinking now, you know, I want to make sure my acquisition managers are busy and have everything, but we have enough leads. And so instead of figuring out, hey, how can I send 30 or 40,000 mailers? You know, how can I take the leads that I'm generating because I'm getting a great response rate and just start dialing in, you know, that process better?
Yes.
Or trying to do more deals out of the money that we're spending versus putting more money to do more deals.
Dude, you're nailing it, man. Like people don't realize the most expensive lead you're going to pay for is the one you don't have. The cheapest one is the one you already have. And so it kind of goes back to what I said a few minutes ago. Less is more. You know, it's... Yeah, obviously you want to look at new lead channels and you constantly want your marketing pipeline full, but how can you get the most juice out of the squeeze with the leads that you already have? So kind of pivoting into that, man, what does the follow-up system look like? Obviously you and I both know that's a big part of the wholesaling business and really any business for that matter, but I'm kind of curious how you guys are getting the most out of your leads.
Yeah, so basically we use our CRM and it has all the automation built into it with ringless voicemail and text message. So once you go in, you kind of go into a bucket of, can you legally sell the house, which meaning, you know, your owner on title, do you have equity and are you motivated? If those three things play in, then we take every phone call and go on every appointment. And then from that, if they're not in that, then we put them into a follow-up sequence with text and voicemails.
Okay.
And then we also try to gain their email address. So that's kind of a new thing we're working on right now. We put a Zapier into our active campaign. And so now the minute an email address goes into our CRM, they immediately go into a drip. So we're curious to see how that kind of works out.
Yeah.
And we're definitely smaller assignment fees. We're up to like $7,500 assignment fee now.
Okay.
But our text message response. So for when somebody calls in, and we don't get them on the phone, you know, get the deal on the phone and they come back to our follow-up, we're averaging in one of our cities like $7,700 in an assignment and $9,800 in assignment.
Nice.
Just from our text message campaign. And I think we've closed 7 or 8 deals in the last 3 months just strictly on text message follow-up that cost me no money.
That's incredible. Well, by the way, I think you mentioned offline you're using Podio. Do you mind sharing like what, is it like a custom built solution for Podio or is it like one of these plug and play systems?
Plug and play. So it's Don Ross's Beast Mode CRM.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. We've had Don Ross on the podcast as well. We'll include a link to that in the show notes page. So so this automated follow-up sequence consists of text messages, voicemail drops, and now you're incorporating like an autoresponder series with emails, right?
Correct. Yeah. So we're just pulling, and the autoresponder is designed to get them to go to our carrot site. So, because okay. they're, you know, obviously going to us through the web. And so we've done the concierge service with Carrot. We're working on getting our website to be a better tool than what it is. And so now the email is going to drive everybody back to our Carrot site with their content.
Amazing, man. Amazing. So you've mentioned a few different times, you're a couple cities. How many markets are you guys in, Brandon?
So our primary markets are Augusta, Georgia, and Columbia, South Carolina. Okay. They're about an hour from each other. We do some buy and holds and flips in Jackson, Mississippi. And then a fourth market that we're looking into right now, I think we have four or five contracts, is Louisville, Kentucky. So those are kind of the four cities that we are operating in.
But you mentioned you have three acquisitions managers, and your model is to meet with them face to face, right? You're not doing too many deals on the phone?
No, we do more on the phone.
Oh, so you do? Okay.
Yeah. So we do it on the phone. And so our acquisition team all lives here in Charleston, and they go up once a week, every other week, to either Columbia or Augusta, depending on where their market is. And they'll work on leads that they need to get face to face. So if somebody is super motivated and they want to close and we can get them over the phone, we do. But some of the more old school sellers want to meet face to face. And so they'll go up there and spend like a day or two in the market and get contracts.
I'm curious, man, because I'm always impressed when I connect with people that do a lot of business on the phone. That's something we haven't really been able to crack that code. Then again, we haven't really spent a whole lot of time and resources on it. But having put my acquisitions team through John Martinez's sales training, you know, I've always kind of been fascinated and found it somewhat challenging to have my team take a seller through the sales process on the phone. I've just always found it to be much easier face to face. I think you can build rapport easier. How have you guys been able to do that on the phone? And I'm wondering how much of it has to do, you know, here in Miami, we have a heavily Hispanic populated community, and a lot of people in our market anyways, a lot of these old school Cubans and just older people that we work with are just very, you need to build that trust and rapport, and they want to be belly to belly with you. I don't know if that's a made up story in my mind, but for me, I just don't know that doing deals on the phone would work in my market. I'm sure it would, and maybe we just haven't figured it out. I'm kind of curious how you guys are successful at doing so.
Yeah, so I definitely think we missed some deals because we do it over the phone, you know, because everybody can put a wall up when they're talking to you through a cell phone.
Sure.
It's a lot easier to not see the house, not say, hey, you know, your house is in this condition, how can you expect this price? So we kind of leave it on the acquisition manager judgment to whether they need to go face to face with the seller or not. Because it definitely is easier to build rapport. We just try to take them through as much of the process on the phone if we can.
Okay.
What we've done is we have some contractor relationships in all of our markets, and our contractors are a huge piece of us buying over the phone. So a lot of times we'll set up stuff to go, and then our contractor will actually go lay eyes on the house, and it helps us kind of get to where we need to go.
Okay.
We're still not 100% confident that buying over the phone is the right answer, but it was really hard to manage a team in multiple cities.
I get it.
The person lived in the city and I lived in Charleston.
Sure.
And so we kind of cut some things and stayed here in Charleston and have had success with it. I'm definitely not saying it's the easiest thing to do. And you definitely have to pay. You have to listen to your sales calls. You have to audit your acquisition managers on the phone, because it's really easy. Oh, I want $140,000. Okay, well, that doesn't work. I'll talk to you later.
Yeah.
So they do a lot of the cherry picking on the top and don't necessarily work as hard on the phone. So you don't have to manage that.
Okay, that makes sense. And you kind of mentioned the audit process. Selfishly, I kind of want to just ask you, how do you guys go through doing your lead audits, your acquisition manager audits? Do you have a specific process or system, or what does that look like?
No, this is brand new. So I got it from our mastermind Facebook group when Gabriel was talking about it. And then I just started poking around and listening to calls. So we have a sales meeting every Tuesday. And we've started bringing sales calls into the meeting and letting the team listen. And it makes them really uncomfortable. And not uncomfortable in a bad way, but this past sales meeting, so this past Tuesday, the acquisition manager that we brought it on, I mean, the whole team sitting there hearing it, you know, this guy is all about a price reduction right now. And he didn't go for it. He didn't take the price. You know, the acquisition manager didn't kind of go for the close and go for the price reduction. And it was a good teaching point to say, hey, if you hear these cues, you know, this is when you got to say, hey, if guaranteeing a close and having these certain things, you know, these deal killers and objectives guaranteed, you know, I can do that for this price.
Yeah.
And probably in that position could have gotten a seller to take a, probably about a $10,000 price reduction in our opinion.
Yeah.
And so that's been the best. So I do most of the calls. I just hop on a screen recorder on my phone. And I don't know if you've ever had John or Greg audit y'all's calls before.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so I just do exactly what Greg does. I just pause and record, give my feedback based on the sales process. Mm-hmm. And then I have kind of folders for all the AMs to listen to. They all have access to everybody's folders. Okay. So it's not just, you know, Eric listens to Eric, Gene listens to Gene. They can cross and listen to everybody else. I also do sales calls. So I put myself in the ring. I don't make it, you know, just about them. And then we get in front of each other and listen to them on Tuesdays. And that's really helped because they know, you know, this call might be brought in on Tuesday. I need to make sure I hit my points.
You know, what's incredible about what you're doing, and it's something that, you know, we've been doing as well, is it brings a whole level of accountability to your team that otherwise wouldn't be there because, like you said, it makes them uncomfortable, but in a good way. You know, people just bring their best when they know that they're going to be held accountable. It's kind of like, you know, you think about coaching and stuff, and sometimes people complain, you know, oh, it's too expensive, right? But when you pay attention. And that's kind of the analogy I can think about here is when people know that they're going to be listened to and it's going to be public in front of the team, I think they just play at a higher level, right?
No, I agree with you. There's nothing worse than, you know, feeling like, you know, I'm going to sit here with my peers and I know exactly what I'm supposed to do. It's written out. And, you know, I just didn't do it because I didn't want to.
Yeah.
And people that want to be good want to be held accountable. You know,
yes.
It's the people that don't want to be successful and don't want to succeed and don't want to grow. They don't want to be held accountable because they know that accountability is not going to help them kind of, you know, grow to where they want to be.
Yeah, I know. Spot on. And the last thing I'll kind of mention as far as this is concerned is, you know, my opinion, and this is something that I do with my team, don't be shy to be just super transparent with the numbers, with the overhead. Let them know how much it costs for that phone to ring. Let them know what you spend on marketing because it gives them some perspective. You know what I mean? That like if they miss a call, that costs X amount of dollars. And more importantly, it's just a missed opportunity to like fulfill our purpose, help someone. You know, obviously this is a business, so we have to generate revenue and close deals. And so I'm just super transparent with them. And I find that they appreciate it. And it gives them just more of context, more understanding as to why certain things are so important versus just saying, hey, you got to do it this way, or hey, you got to pick up the calls live. Like I kind of give them the backstory. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's one of the things I like about our CRM is everything's in there.
Yep.
But especially with our team in the Philippines, when I told them, I was like, every time this phone rings, this is how much it costs.
That's right.
I mean, literally every time this rings, no matter what happens with this outcome, that's what the cost of this phone call ringing is.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not realize that, you know, what the cost was and how it was. And that's really opened their eyes. And I agree. We're completely transparent. Our acquisition team knows what a contract costs. They know what we spend on marketing. They know what we spend on education because we believe in reinvesting in our team. You know, so they know what it costs for us to send them to John Martinez in January and do all those kind of things, you know, so that they do buy in and want to give the best that they can.
Yeah. No, fantastic, man. So I kind of want to transition now into marketing. You know, you don't get to do 100 to 200 deals a year if you just don't have your marketing on point. And I know we were talking before we started the podcast that a big percentage of your deals comes from direct mail. That's kind of your bread and butter. And then also referral marketing. So I'd like to kind of touch on those two things and then we can kind of start to wrap up the show. Direct mail, you know, I've talked about it a lot in the past. I'm always curious to just pick the brain of just marketing ninjas. What are you guys doing from a direct mail standpoint that's working? And I realize that's a very just vague general question, but I kind of want to drill down like, what list are you hitting? What pieces are you sending? Frequency as far as how often? How are you tracking everything? I know I'm kind of throwing a lot at you, but maybe we can kind of start from the get-go.
Yeah, so the CRM tracks everything. Had we not had that, I couldn't give you answers to anything. I was a basket case when it came to understanding tracking up until we got Beast Mode in April. As far as frequency, so we mail everybody every 4 weeks. Unless you've called in, opted out, or we bought the house, you're getting a postcard or a letter every 4 weeks.
Okay.
And so, like I said, we're sending anywhere in the mid 20,000s per city that we're in. So mainly Columbia and Augusta. We're just kind of a little bit in Jackson and Louisville. We're not really full throttle in. So I'll just focus on Columbia and Augusta. So we send the mid 20,000s a piece. We have everybody in a six kind of step process, a six touch process. And they start with a Google postcard first. Second, we drop a pink doodle card, which is just a pink postcard with some handwriting on it. Yeah. Third, we do the third notice postcard. It's definitely our most volatile painted card that we...
Yeah. Yeah. People, and like, if I send you some of the recordings, like, you'd laugh and you'd kind of be terrified. People get pissed.
And so we got our first consumer affairs complaint on one of them. And there's the joke is like, you know, Papa John's, Lowe's, everybody sends mail. And I asked the lady on consumer affairs, I said, you know, do people call you every day about Lowe's postcards and stuff? And she said, thousands of calls a day. Wow. So it made me feel good that people aren't just mad at my mail, they're mad at everybody's mail.
Yeah.
But yeah, so those three and the queue, the third notice, we don't buy a lot of deals from it when we send that letter. We just build our database. I mean, we'll get 70, 80 calls a day sometimes on third notice. Mm-hmm. And then all we're doing is taking all those numbers and putting them into automation and texting them and voicemailing them and calling them back.
Yeah.
So our VA team calls everybody every 30 days. So once we have you in our database, you're going to stay there forever until you ask to be removed or something like that. Sure. And then our best response is our fourth touch. So it's the old school Robin Thompson horse letter.
Man, I know Robin Thompson. When I got started in the business 2005, she was, so I don't think I've ever shared this on the podcast, but my first mentor in the business was Stan Merrill when he was kind of just getting started in, you know, teaching people. And Robin, I think, was Stan's coach when Fan Merrill, before there were fortune builders, right? When it was just like CT Holmes. So, but I don't know about her horse letter. What does that look like?
So it's a really cheesy letter. It's basically has a water logo kind of horse in a barn. And then it has a really nice kind of personal written letter. It's like, hey, I live in this neighborhood or I'm looking to buy in this neighborhood. I don't remember the exact text to it. I'll send it to you. It's just a really kind of soft letter. We get our deepest deals and we get our highest response rate off that letter.
Is there, does the copy kind of tie into the fact that there's a horse in a barn or is it just kind of random?
Just random. And man, so, yeah, so it's, she shared it to me. I was at the OREA event in Dayton, Ohio last year and listened to her speak and she gave everybody the horse letter. And so I just came home and she's like, I'm giving it to you to use. And so all we did was go home and start using it. And it's been a success. And so now we're going to basically what she kind of taught was, you know, change the horse letter based on the season. So like for Halloween, we'll put a pumpkin on it. For Christmas, we'll put Santa Claus on it. 4th of July, put a American flag or fireworks or something. And it's my favorite letter. It's my best response. I think we get like a 7% response rate on that letter.
That's insane.
Yeah, so and then it comes on a nice envelope. And we used to handwrite all of our envelopes. We can't do that now at our numbers. But so we do our horse letter for four. And then five, we do just kind of an oversized postcard. And then six, we do a final notice. You know, hey, we're trying this. This is the last time we're going to try to talk to you.
Yeah.
And then basically at that six, so it's 6 months. And we're kind of messing around with this data now because we're starting to see maybe not the response where we want on five and six because we've mailed these people so many times. Maybe trying to condense this into like 4 months instead of 6 months of new data. So basically at the end of 6 months, we go through and redo our data. We buy from Listability. We buy from ListSource are the only two sources that we buy. Okay. And then as far as we try to build and get as much as we can from the counties. So we build eviction. We do tax delinquent. We do code violation. We do foreclosure, We do divorce. We do, I build my own probate leads. Okay. And so, you know, that's kind of, you know, and then we just basically stack everything and try not to mail, you know, six people if they're on all six lists. Okay.
Are you spearheading this, Brandon, or do you have somebody in-house that kind of has this expertise? Because you have to know how to, like, you know, how to source these lists, how to kind of sift and sort through them. I'm curious if you kind of have somebody just that you hired somebody dedicated, or is that something that's kind of like your baby?
So that's what I built. So basically I just, you know, we started trying to buy. I've never really been educated on where to buy a list. Mm-hmm. In fact, I just asked on Facebook yesterday for some help on where we can get some more lists. But yeah, I just started getting into the tax assessor sites, the court records, and just started playing around and seeing what data was available. For instance, like probate, you know, probate leads are expensive. It could be $3 or $4 a lead, and then you have to market to them. Right. And of course, there's successors data out there. I've heard hit or miss things on it. And so I just started playing around, and what we actually had to find was we had to look up like death certificates and then basically plug the beneficiary back into tax records, plug the person back in, and kind of, you know, work backwards. And so basically I've just made a whole bunch of training videos on how to scrub all these lists. And then I have Darlene in the Philippines. She updates them. You know, she's in there every day updating.
Okay. Got it. So, I'm curious, Brandon, of the 300 sold deals you guys have done in the last year and a half to 2 years, what's kind of been the 80-20 rule as far as, you know, which lists have produced most of your deals?
So the most of our deals is the absentee list from ListSource.
Okay.
But it's just kind of the most common. But the best list that performs for us month in and month out is Driving for Dollars.
Really?
I talk about it every time people ask. We don't really have it scalable. I don't have my notebook with me. Now I have it in my truck. But basically, you know, I'm always driving for dollars. If I'm in my truck and, you know, I'm always writing addresses down, our acquisition team's always writing addresses down. And we've been building a driving for dollars database for about 2.5 years. And we just consistently stay to that list. And we have thousands of people on our list now. And it is hands down the best list that we mail month in and month out.
Can you kind of walk us through, you know, so I'm guessing most people listening know what driving for dollars is. If you don't, you know, whenever you're in your car driving around, you see a vacant property boarded up, tall grass, you know, a notice in the door. There's a number of signs that you look for, right? Yeah. Beat up old rusted cars with like out of state license plates. I mean, there's, you know, just a ton of stuff you can look for, right? You get the address. What do you, because I know you were talking that you guys are not really big on skip tracing. What do you do? So you have a Google Sheet, or this goes into Podio. You have this database of all these addresses, right? Can you kind of walk us through the process or the steps, how you've been able to monetize those driving for dollars leads?
Yeah. So basically, you know, everybody kind of has their own driving for dollars notebook. And we don't just mail to abandoned houses. You know, that's a big thing. I know driving for dollars people talk about is like, look, reported up tall grass, those kind of signs. We teach a little bit kind of finer tune to that. You know, I do mail to people that live in their house. I don't have a problem with that. I think one of the best avatars for a seller right now is a homeowner versus an absentee owner, as far as like the deeper discounts. And so what the big thing we kind of look for, and it's intangible. You can't really describe it, but it's kind of like a sense of ownership on the house. You know, so we look at stuff like blinds. If the blinds are kind of crinkled and bent. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can imagine the soffit and fascia rotting, just certain things that the people don't have any pride in their house. And it's not because they maybe don't have it. Maybe they don't have the means, they've lost their job, whatever it is. And I tell all my team, I was like, I'd rather send somebody a mailer than you guess whether or not I should mail that person or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
And so we basically, everybody has their notebooks. We all write, and I have a big Google sheet for whatever city it is. And then basically they put in their stuff every week. And then, one of our VAs goes and goes to the, assessor site, gets the mailing address. Mm-hmm. And then we just mail it, update it once a month. So we go through and drop it in Property List Manager, make sure any, you know, see if it's tied anywhere else, and then mail it, every month.
So dude, I'm going to share with you a resource that I don't know if you've heard about it or not, and I think this will be really useful. It could be useful for you, Brandon, and for everybody else listening. And it kind of takes what you guys are doing and puts it on steroids to a certain degree. It just automates the process more. Have you heard of SendFuse?
SendFuse, no.
Yeah, so if you go to getsendfuse.com, a buddy of mine, I don't know if you know Dan Schwartz. I've had him on the podcast before. He was the guy behind InvestorFuse, which is he's built a essentially, you know, an automated, you know, CRM built on Podio for real estate investors. Yep. So if you go to getsendfuse.com, the way this works, it's super cool. You get set up, they have a series of postcards already uploaded into their system. And so when you drive by, all you got to do is text a particular phone number that you get when you sign up for SendFuse. You say send mail to and the address, right? And the system within seconds will automatically kick back a text to you that says, is this the address, right? And you'll say yes or no, like you'll confirm. You'll say yes, and then it'll say, perfect, we've launched your automated postcard sequence to this seller's name at this seller's mailing address. So I guess through API, they've already done it, and it automatically sends them a series of, I think it's 6 postcards over the course of 2 to 3 months, and it happens automatically. And then it's tracked in the, you know, when you sign in, it's tracked like in your back office. The best part about it is it's super cheap. You pay, you don't have to pay like thousands of dollars for the system. You pay a buck a postcard. Okay.
Gotcha, okay. So
they charge you double, but it's totally automated.
Yeah. I have to look into that. Cause we've looked at like Deal Machine and stuff, and just haven't pulled any of the triggers on it. Is this the way we've always done it? But there's definitely a lot of time spent getting it done.
Yep. No, that's awesome, man. Absolutely, man. I'm happy to talk to you offline about it if you want. But that's interesting, man. So a lot of your deals, direct mail, referrals, and then driving for dollars, that kind of blows me away, because we are not, aside from using GetSendFuse, we're not really focusing too much on that. And I think the lesson learned for me is that it's funny how we were talking about driving for dollars and my mind automatically went to vacant houses, and you kind of quickly checked me and you said, hey, it's not just vacant houses, but
yeah,
you know, the best avatar is the homeowner. And I know that, but I automatically just defaulted to vacant houses.
Yeah. So I drive with my acquisition managers. We look for multiple satellite dishes. We look for, like I said, the blinds. You know, a lot of homeowners have their blinds open. A lot of renters keep their blinds closed. I don't know why. But I started paying attention to it. I look at my neighborhood and, you know, I pay attention to some other places and I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. I notice their blinds are always closed. I know they're a renter. And so we pay attention to blinds. The front yard's not always the best. The backyard's definitely where you want to look at the grass, because sometimes neighbors will cut the front yard. And just small signs of no pride in ownership.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of stuff that way.
I'm just curious, are you using a voice memo to yourself on your smartphone? Are you using Voxer, or are you just like literally stopping when you see a house and you're just jotting down the address?
I get really awkward. I'm slow rolling through the neighborhood in my big blue truck.
Oh man. So people are like, dude, who's this big dude in this car? You know, like,
yeah. Yeah. No, I buy houses all over it. So, you know, I have no problem. I'll roll my windows down. I'll talk to neighbors. You know, when I drive for dollars, I take it serious, because I know how important it is to do it right.
Yeah, good for you, man. Yeah. Hey, brother, I want to be respectful of your time as we start to kind of wrap this up here. What else would you kind of share with people that has kind of really moved the needle for you guys this year? I mean, just the fact that 2.5 years ago you weren't in business, and now you know you guys are doing 100 to 150 to 200 deals a year just kind of blows my mind. I don't want to ask you a very cliche, what's the secret to your success, but what has really kind of impacted the business when you look back at the last 10 months or so?
I think two of the biggest things, one of them is you have to have automation in your business. If your CRM, if your email campaign, if that stuff's not working for you while you're sleeping, or, you know, on appointments or doing something, then you're not set up correctly. Uh-huh. I did not understand how important it was to have SMS drips and voicemail drips and now email campaigns that just they're constantly going 24/7. I don't have to see if they're working today. I don't have to audit their numbers. I don't have to do any of that stuff. I know they're sending texts. I know they're sending voicemails, and I know that. And And so if you don't have that built in, you know, I use my CRM, but, you know, find somebody that can build it for you, find a CRM that works. And then secondly is when you build stuff in your business. So we hired Gary Harper. We've done a lot of stuff with those guys.
Great guy.
Gary and Susan and his team have been awesome for us. And it used to be like, hey, we're going to do this. And then I just send it to my team and they just start doing their own stuff. And next thing you know, I have six people doing six different things, trying to get the same results. And so now, you know, I take the time, I process map it, I record videos, I create training for it, and then we release it out to the team. And so, you know, for instance, we were having a conversation with Caleb Pearson in Charleston here yesterday. Mm-hmm. He gave us an idea that he uses on his home buying business. And my partner was like, all right, just get that started tomorrow. And I was like, no, that's not how we do this anymore. I'm going to go home. I'll map it out. I'll make some training videos. And then we'll release it to the team on Monday. And it helps because it helps keep the clutter from coming back to you. Because you just say, hey, go to your map, go to your process. You know, 1, 2, 3. And if you didn't, why didn't you do that? You know, go back and do it this way.
Yeah.
And so that's been a big help for us. Mm-hmm. And those are the two things is be consistent in your follow-up and then, you know, map out your process and, you know, teach it to your team and stick to it.
Yeah, that's great advice, bro. That's great advice. Well, hey, man, listen, I really appreciate you taking the time to hop on. Like I said, man, it's I look forward to, you know, to just building a relationship, getting to know you better, man. I've heard great things about you. And
yeah.
I reached out. I wanted to have you on it. I know you and I met in San Diego about, you know, 5-6 months ago briefly as I was taking off. And yeah, man, it's awesome to see down-to-earth guy just kind of crushing it, man. And you know, my hope is that people listening to this can take at least one or two things implemented in their business so that they can kind of start to see the results that that you've experienced the last year to 2 years.
It is. Yeah, man. And that's it. Don't drink from a fire hose. You know, you can listen to all the podcasts and go to masterminds and educate yourself. Take one thing, put it in your business, put it in your business correctly, and then, you know, build on that as a building block.
Yep, absolutely. So, hey, Brandon, where do people connect with you, man? What's the best place to reach out?
Yeah, so I'm super active on Facebook. I think it's BBarnsHBN, I think is my username, but you can just look for me on Brandon Barnes. And then you can email me at BBarnes@HBNMarketplace.com. And then, you know, feel free to text me. I don't mind giving you my cell phone. It's 843-990-3409. I love helping as much as I can. If I have the resource, I'll help. If not, I'll try to find it to help you as much as I can.
Very cool, man. Well, guys, as always, we'll include all these resources in the show notes page. And, you know, if you've been following the show for a while, you know, this is episode 258. You know, wow. You've probably heard me talk about speed of implementation. I really think that that's one of the keys that separates people that succeed from people that just kind of flounder. You know, how quickly are you going to take something that Brandon has shared and just implement it in your business, kind of shove everything else to the side, focus on that one thing. And then once you get it dialed in, then you can kind of move on to the next one. You know, it's amazing what you can accomplish in a relatively short amount of time, you know, 6 to 12 months, if you just kind of put your head down and you're very intentional about what you want to accomplish. So that's all I got, man. Brandon, I know you and I will continue to stay in touch. And guys, I look forward to catching you on the next one.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you, buddy.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.